You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. So in this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Kyle Kuhn. Today, Kyle is an accomplished endurance athlete, including marathons, Ironman triathlon. He's a two-time Paralympian and a motivational speaker. He's done some amazing things. But what we talk about today is his experience looking for a job after college and that he was unable to find a job and he hit a pretty low point. So we talk about the choices that he made to turn that around. Now, this story, like so many stories I tell, has layers. You see, Kyle lost his sight when he was just a young child. So we'll talk about that. Today, we talk about college, we talk about career, we talk about job hunting, we talk about running, we talk about triathlon. And in one of truly the wildest twists of any interview I've done yet, the very first time I talked to Kyle was when we did this interview, but we discover in the course of this conversation that we have actually raced together. I actually am still shaking my head about how just wild that connection is. So if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's do this. Kyle Kuhn, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am always ready for a fun chat.
I suspect that about you. I really do. So I start every single interview asking my guests where they call home. Tell us where you are today, where you live.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Wherever I lay my head is home kind of these days. But I'm calling in from Victoria, British Columbia, where my partner lives full time. And then I also live part time in Colorado.
Very nice.
Wherever I lay my head is home, basically, these days.
All right. Very nice. So in a second, we're going to talk about the official topic that you proposed for the interview. But I'm going to ask one more warm-up question so to give the audience a chance to get to know you a little bit better. Tell us, me and the audience, something that's a hobby or a passion or something you really enjoy that's not related to family or work, but something that you enjoy doing that is not related to family or work.
Oh, something that's not related to family or work. And that's a tough one because like my work has basically, well, like what I enjoyed became my work. but if I was to go outside of the, the realm of, adventure sport and, swim, bike, run, rock climb, ski, all that kind of stuff that I now do for a living. I would have to say that playing the game of chess is one of my favorite things to do.
Very nice. All right. That is completely different. I love that you shared that. So when you like to play chess, do you like the online, like chess.com, like the apps and things like that? Or how do you like to play?
I prefer to play people in person. So actually most, I have one friend that, I play basically just about every week. He comes over to the house and we have just an epic, like 3 or 4 hour game of chess.
very nice. Very
so
nice.
It's a ton of fun, but I absolutely play, online on, chess.com is my go-to app that I play against the computer. I play some of the short, 15 to 30 minute games, not really a tournament player, but no, just something that I've really enjoyed, doing. I'm terrible, but it's a fun thing.
We have to have things in our life that we're not doing as a part of competition. I have a nephew who's very interested in chess, and this is unrelated to the interview, but within the last couple of years, we were at a family member's house who had a very modern decorative chess set that's been on display for probably 20 years and no one's played.
Wow.
And so the pieces had, no one has been paying attention. It's just really out for display. The pieces are, they're shifted around, and this kid sat down and he's like, these are not in order. But then we had like a whole group effort to try and figure out what these very modern shapes were in terms of the pieces, because it's like, well, wait, is this a bishop or what is this? Because they were super, super nondescript, but that was a pretty, pretty funny thing. All right. So
That's awesome.
what we're going to talk about today is not actually chess,
No.
but, we're going to talk about a shift that you went through after college. It's a decision that you made to work on yourself. And you shared that with me in the intake form that when you graduated from college, you described yourself, you wrote this, not me, arrogant and with the mindset of, I'm going to apply for every job, CEO and above. But within a year, you were turned down to work at a grocery store. And that is what shifted to getting you to work on fixing your life. Does that sound like something you want to talk about today?
I mean, I absolutely am always willing to bear my soul in that regard because if people can learn from my mistakes and my choices and decision making process, then I am all for it to help people make better decisions and to learn from my experience.
That is absolutely one of the reasons I seek out these stories. I think that it's really, really helpful to know, because when we all go through various phases of our life where we think we know what we're doing, we think we've got it covered, and then if it doesn't go the way we expect, we really can internalize it. But if you talk to people who have different experiences, so this is one of the big ones. A lot of people think that they're going to be off to the races after college, and then when they go through it, a lot of stuff can shift and doesn't work out. Let's start with this. What did you study? What was the coursework that you studied when you were in school?
Yeah, so I studied interpersonal organizational communication, which is a really fancy way of saying that I could write decent research papers and I could speak to groups large or small. And I had, chosen that because, number one, I had been doing quite a bit of writing and stuff. At some point, I wanted to chronicle my life in some type of memoir or autobiography or something along those lines. So I figured communication would help me in that regard. I had also done, I had been on stages speaking, just about my experiences as a totally blind, rock climber, downhill skier. And just overall adventure athlete. And so I figured that, the art and science of communication could help me in that regard. And I had, already been on, been interviewed for some major, television and, news programs and, been on national television a handful of times. So I was, relatively confident in myself, and people had always told me that I was extremely articulate, and that if I, studied communication, I would become even more so. And so I went into college actually already with I went in with I think it was like 30 or so credits of college credit already just from AP and dual enrollment coursework, and I was one of those few students that didn't change their major
Yep.
over the course of school. And so I actually I entered college 2 weeks after I graduated high school and graduated in almost exactly 3 years. So blazed through it relatively quickly, and I was just I rolled into the world. This was back in 2013, so at that time, the popular thing was the young hotshot, tech entrepreneur or person that did not either finish college or never went to college, or you didn't need a college degree to be successful. You just needed, tenacity and to think differently and to get out into the world and make stuff happen, and that's what I felt that I was.
All right, that's very fair. So 2013, that absolutely was a vibe at that time. That's around That's when a lot of those stories were coming out, like people were like Warby Parker and companies like that, that were, people were dropping out of school with these amazing, successful, innovative products. So, if you and I had been friends when you were younger, like if we'd been friends in like middle school and I had asked you what you wanted to do when you grew up, what was the job you wanted to do, what would you have said?
What would I have said? That I don't know what I would have said because I really wasn't sure. Back in middle school, probably I wanted to be a professional speaker,
Okay.
which, funnily enough, now I am.
I was gonna say that's pretty spot on given the circle of your trajectory there. All right, very good.
Like so, I mean, look, if you had asked me when I was like 5, 6 years old, I wanted to be a, a professional basketball player,
Right.
growing up, and then, going totally blind and actually only winding up being 5'11", and a guy who can, whose vertical jump is about 3 inches, not happening. So
So
I shifted from that to,
that's
but,
definitely a part of the evolution of people growing up. So if you talk to kids when they're little and they first of all, they only know famous things. So they firemen and firemen, policemen, movie star, ballerina, basketball player, baseball player, and their concept of their own personal greatness is so amazing at that point. They're just, they can always win. And it's a little bit sad as an adult to watch when they come to this realization. So one of the kids in our family, when he was young, he was positive. He wanted to be J Derek Jeter when he grew up. He wanted to be a New York Yankee. And I remember the day when he was like, well, why isn't everyone a professional baseball player? Why doesn't everybody do this? And it's the realization that not everybody grows into it, not everybody can c become it. But it's part of our evolution as people and figuring out what that is. So we're gonna talk a little bit more about this, but since you brought it up, I want to make sure that everybody listening and watching is all on the same page. You do have a visual impairment. You lost your sight when you were young child. Do you want to tell us like the highlight of that so that everybody knows what you're dealing with?
Sure. So I was diagnosed with a rare form of eye cancer called bilateral sporadic retinoblastoma when I was 10 months old. And basically, I went through 5 or 6 years of pretty intensive cancer treatment. Every time I went in, we would kill the cancer, but then it would come back stronger than ever. And eventually, what had to happen was I had my left eye removed when I was 5 years old and my right eye just before I turned 7. So that left me totally blind and fortunately cancer free as well.
Yeah.
Grew up, so I had some usable vision in the first 5, 6 years of my life, but basically from the time I was about 7 years old until now, I have been totally blind.
All right. So that definitely makes some of the things that you do and you accomplish, it throws them into a different light. When you were so you lost this was this is your lived experience from when you're a young kid, and so this is a crazy question to ask because it's one of those things where it's a question for I did not live this experience, and many people living, listening, and watching have not lived this experience. But as somebody who is going through living life in a world where many people around you have sight and you're living without sight, when you were a new college graduate, when you were in high school, when you were thinking about your future, how would you say that you thought that your vision impairment would impact your choices?
Well, throughout, growing up, it didn't feel like, it didn't feel challenging. Because I was surrounded by people that constantly told me, you can do anything if you just, put your mind to it. And, basically I was uberly and ultimately very successful as a, as a teenager and as a very young adult, into college. I had great grades, had great, developed great friendships. I was a, decent, I was a decent athlete. And I was just, my head was filled of, everyone telling me how amazing I was. And that I was going to be successful. And I knew that, being totally blind, it was going to affect my, I knew it was going to affect the choices I made, eventually, and it was going to affect how I was perceived in the greater world, because I lived in this little bubble of people that, believed in me. But it's hard to wrap your mind around, how small your bubble is until you expand it just a little bit. And when once I got out into the world, and I'm applying for job after job after job, and going quickly getting interviews and going on interviews, and then immediately just being rejected, even though the qualifications and all that say differently, I definitely started to wonder and question myself, and started a downward spiral.
Okay, that's fair. That's very fair. When I wrote that question, I was pretty sure it was, I think that it is, it's a two sides of the same coin. Like people are very curious about what it's like. And then it's the same kind of thing where you ask somebody, if you don't have any other experience, how could you know anything else? So it's both sides of that. So I wanted to give it a try, but I totally get that. So I think what you're saying, I wanted to ask you about your perception of where this sense of overconfidence came from. But it's sounding to me like what you're saying is that you think that it might have started in the fact that you had such a secure, supportive group of people, your bubble around you. Like, where do you think that the sense of overconfidence started for you?
I mean, it definitely started with, the people that I surrounded myself with. I was always surrounded by extremely successful people, that pushed and challenged me, and ultimately I felt that I was successful, already. It's really, it's really hard to, tell a totally blind, 21-year-old, or to, convince myself that, after, when you go and, speak on an international, convention stage at 12 years old, and, just about skiing and rock climbing and all that, or when you are invited to, national competitions as a totally blind, rock climber who, who competes against sighted kids when blind rock climbing wasn't even a thing.
Yeah.
Or, when you're like, when your idea of fun is, what other kids are like, I like, my idea of fun is, going out and driving around town with my friends. And, my idea of fun is, hey, I like, I'm gonna, go to Africa and climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Like,
Yeah.
just it was a different level. And then just everything, most subjects and stuff that I worked on in school, and all that, I was relatively good at. Like, it nothing like I was challenged, but it didn't over stress me at all. And like, it was just, I didn't have a Midas touch. It wasn't like that I had a Midas touch, but, I never was pushed and challenged to, the extent that, I maybe, I didn't push myself, to overcome as many things as I thought. And so that, all the successes that I had led me to believe that, doesn't matter. Like, I'll succeed at, I'll find something to succeed at.
Well, I
So
would say that
it was
that's,
interesting.
yeah, I would say that that is, I would say you'd had nothing to show you otherwise. So that makes sense. So when did the passion, so you talk about rock climbing, You did that as a kid. You have done other things too. Okay, so rock climbing, you have climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and you also are a two-time Paralympian in multisport in triathlon, I think,
Yes,
right? Yep.
correct.
When did the passion for endurance sports and adventure sports, when did that start?
So the passion for adventure sport started when I was very young. So my mentor is a guy named Eric Weinmayer, and I met him when I was about, 8 years old. And he was, at the time he wasn't as famous as he is now. But he was he's a totally blind adventure athlete, downhill skier, skydiver, mountain climber, rock climber. A few years after I met him, he became world famous for being the first blind man to climb Mount Everest. And so he actually encouraged me at a very young age to try rock climbing, and that's when I got into competitive rock climbing, and then that spiraled off into hiking, backpacking, downhill skiing, all those kinds of things. And then the love and passion for endurance sport in particular came after came actually in about 2014, and that was what kind of pulled me out of this downward spiral that I was in after college, because I was a year removed from graduating. I was deep in debt. Had gone in and applied to be a bag boy at a grocery store and was turned down for it. And once you experience that, it's like, maybe I'm, it basically was the slap upside the head that I needed, saying, I am actually, right now I am not successful and I need to figure something out. And so the one area that I figured I could work on was at least getting my body back into shape. And then, basically the only thing I could afford to do, because I had no money, was run. And so I started running, and the guy that I wound up running with, I told him that running was stupid, because I was struggling with it, and he said, "Yeah, running is stupid. You should do triathlon." And I said, "Cool, what's that?" And here we are over 10 years later.
All right, so that's the timeline. So you had done downhill skiing, winter sports, rock climbing before you went to college. Then it was after this. I love this story. All right, very good. So you get graduate from school, and you're looking for a job, and it's not working out the way that you wanted to. You go into the grocery store job, and you don't get that. When that happens, so you were just talking about that. I want to ask you to go back to that day where you'd been looking for a job for a year, you were spiraling and you knew it. A grocery store packer job is definitely considered, an entry-level job. It's a, right, it's a one that pretty much my kids have done that as, a first job, right? Because it's like easily trainable, that kind of thing. When you did not get that, can you think back and describe how you felt in that moment in just a couple of words? Not as a way to judge you, but as a way to sort of describe it to the listeners and for anybody who's in a spot like that, feel like camaraderie with that. This is how it feels.
Look, I felt like a failure and a loser. Just to be quite, honest and frank, I felt like a failure and a loser, because I was like, I have a bachelor's degree in communication. I have, I was, I wrestled in, I wrestled in college. I had been a group exercise instructor in college. So like, it's not like it was, my first ever job. And I was just like, well, like, it seems like the most difficult part of this job is asking someone if they would like paper or plastic. How can I not do this? And why am I being told I can't do this? And so, like, at that point, yeah, I felt like a failure and a loser.
Which is not a good way to feel. Fair
No.
enough. Fair enough. But I think that it's Worth talking about because if you are when I refer to the time like after I graduated in college from college, I sometimes say I'm like I approach this with the confidence that you can only have when you're 24 and you don't know any better, right? Like so, it definitely is a point, but I think that if we proceed through life and we don't think that there will be moments where we're like, oh my gosh, I am not doing well and we're not ready for it, that makes it even worse. All right, so. You turn your attention to fixing your life, and you already said this. What that meant to you at the time was getting back into physical shape. How did you find the mentor that you were running with who turned you on to triathlon?
So I yeah, so I was really just sitting on the couch one day, and I was like, I like what can I do right now? Like I can't join a gym because I like I said I don't have any money. So I guess I could run, but how does a blind guy run? And so I just Googled how does a blind guy run?
Okay.
Came across how people who are totally visually impaired or totally blind, how they use people who are sighted guides to call out obstacles, and they use these run tethers and all that. And eventually I came across this website, this brand new website called United in Stride,
Yep.
and I it basically was a tool where you could plug in your zip code, and people that were like, yeah, I'll volunteer to be a guide runner for someone who's blind or visually impaired if they want to get out and walk, hike, or run or something like that. And I plugged in the zip code where I lived, and I expanded the search a little bit to like you could search within a 5, 10, 20, 50 mile radius. And I expanded the search, and I think at the time there were only like two people that that showed up in the list of results. And you could contact the person through the website. So I sent them both an email. One of them responded, and I basically said beggars can't be choosers, and arranged to meet up with this guy. I told him basically, yeah, I've never run, I've not really done a whole lot of running in my life, so we're just gonna make this up as we go along. I have no idea what we're doing. And he was like, yep, okay, sounds good. And yeah, we went on a run together, and we did a few runs together, and just I didn't really have anything else to do, and he was in the process of training for his, I think it was his ninth or his 10th Ironman triathlon at the time. And he later told me, he was like, I just wanted someone else to to train with and keep me and hold me accountable so that I actually finished all my my training for Kona. And so that's why he threw out the idea of, hey, you should do triathlon. And I was like, cool, what's that? And got, and then he just, he laid out for me what it was, and I was like, well, that sounds absolutely awful. How do we start doing that? So,
That sounds terrible. What time? Exactly.
exactly.
I have a
Exactly.
shirt that says that on it from my
Yep.
triathlon days. I said,
Yep.
it says that's a horrible idea. What time?
Yep.
And which is really it's sort of the mantra of long course Ironman training. It's like, all
It
right.
certainly is. And I will say, I definitely, after a handful of years, I embraced also the mantra of why suck at one sport when you can suck at three.
I will say it does do that. United in Stride is a wonderful organization. It's for anybody. I'll put a link for that in the show. There's varying degrees of co-captaining and piloting with sighted and non-sighted partners. You were a Paralympian, which requires a very specific set of skills for the person who's with you because you've got pace needs and you're going for goals. And then there's also people who are looking for more sociable local type things. So there's a lot of options for people to volunteer. Yeah.
And I do have to point out that like at when I initially heard about United in Stride, and I joined up and all that, I was not an elite athlete. I was not a Paralympian. Like I call myself an accidental elite athlete
Yeah.
because I just, I had the time on my hands, and I poured all of my energy into learning endurance sport and getting better at it. And yes, eventually I did land land jobs and have something resembling a desk job and a career for a few years, but then accelerated my growth in the in endurance sport and got presented with opportunities to pursue that at a higher level and just grew from there.
And so the when you were working at, so this went from a very basic put one foot in front of the other, turn, take control of the small piece of your life that you had, to you really built a personal brand and a profession around this, I think. Tell us how it's went from reaching out just to put one foot in front of another, to going to the Paralympics, to climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, to I think you've done an Ironman or two.
I have done I've done three Ironmans,
There you go.
so it's actually it's funny because so I did Kilimanjaro when I was 15 years old.
Okay, so that's earlier.
Yeah, so that was earlier. So I did
Okay.
Kilimanjaro when I was 15, and that was one of the things that lent itself to, like, I am successful because I'm the youngest blind guy to ever do Kilimanjaro, like at 15 years old. Like, most kids don't even have their driver's license or their learner's permit at that point.
Yeah.
And I'm climbing a, one of the tallest mount, the tallest mountain on a continent. But the journey of, going from, a slob who, felt like a loser and a, a failure to, making it to, to two Paralympic games. It started just by, wanting to be consistent and get my body back into shape. And, I set some goals. And, once I started running, I was like, hey, I want to actually, I don't want to just do this for fitness. I want to set a goal. And, my buddy was like, oh, well, there's this random 15K road race that we can do in September. I was like, cool, let's sign up for that. I don't know what 15 kilo, I don't know what 15K means, but yeah, let's go do
What could
that.
go wrong? That sounds fun.
Yeah, so did that, and then we finished that, and he's like, hey, I think if you ran a little bit more, you could actually finish the Disney Marathon in January coming up. And I was like, awesome, like, marathon, that's like what, just a little bit longer than we just ran like yesterday. He's like, yeah, just a little bit
Just a
longer.
little bit. It's 42. So you went from 15K to 42 kilometers. Like,
So
so
yeah,
yeah.
something like that. But here was the kicker. He was like, oh yeah, well, the Disney Marathon is at, 'cause I was actually living in Orlando at the time. And so he was like, oh, but the Disney Marathon, it's actually sold out right now. But I went ahead and signed you up for the Goofy Challenge,
Oh
which
my
is
gosh.
the half
It's
marathon the day
right.
before, and then the marathon on the next day. And so I was like,
Oh, so
cool.
that was a long time ago, because now I think the Goofy, no, wait, I'm sorry. So the Goofy is just the half and the full, and then they have the
Yep,
Dopey,
and
which
then Dopey is the five
Dopey is
ten.
everything,
Yep,
5, 10, 13, 26. Okay. All right.
And and
Most expensive
now.
5K you can ever do.
Yeah, well, and now Dopey and Goofy sell out in like, 10 minutes. Whereas like back then it was like, we were able to like the it people weren't quite as crazy about doing those challenges, because everyone, and this was only like 2014, 2015. So it's just amazing how much it's exploded in the last, 10 years. But yeah, my buddy Mike was like, yeah, well, I already signed you up for it. So I was like, oh, great. So I guess we're doing this. And yeah, I just, Mike and I ran together, a bunch between, in those next, 2, 3 months. And I, completed both, completed the Goofy Challenge. And after that, Mike was like, yeah, I think you have the fortitude to do an Ironman. And then that's when I kind of started, training for triathlon, and Over the course of a couple of years, I did a couple of 70.3s or half Ironman distance races. I did a bunch of sprint and Olympic distance triathlons. So, and then in 2016, signed up for my first Ironman, which was at Ironman Boulder in Boulder, Colorado, and ground my way, dragged my body through that. And I finished it in just under 16 hours. And so for those people that don't know what an Ironman consists of, it's a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, and a 26.2 mile run. And it's all, you have to do it all in under 17 hours. And, so I finished Ironman Boulder in just under 16. And, I was like, that was the most awful experience of my life. I can't wait to do it again.
That's so crazy. So 2016, you were in Boulder.
Yep. So I did
So was
Ironman
I. Did you
Boulder.
know that?
I did not.
Yeah, so you and I did Ironman Boulder the same year. That's crazy.
Wow, that is wild.
That is crazy. So I've realized that we should backtrack here because there's a thing that you and I both know that we haven't shared with the audience, which is how it works when a non-sighted runner is participating. So we talked about how you have a partner in this, and sometimes you're tethered to the partner when you run. In triathlon, there's a couple things. So the bike, right? You're not on a bike by yourself, I don't think. But are you on a tandem bike when you're doing triathlon?
Yep. I'm on a tandem. My guide is up front steering, shifting, braking, also pedaling. That's a thing that everyone's like, does the guide pedal as well? It's like, yes, they do.
Yeah, because otherwise you'd be pushing for two people. It would be unfair.
It'd be a lot.
It'd be unfair. And that's one of the things that is very interesting because you have to be about the same height as the person who is your partner when you do that.
Yeah, ideally,
Yeah,
ideally.
ideally. So I'm like that. It usually knocks me out for being a pilot on the bike because because I'm pretty short. But the and then in the swim, how do you guys work together on the swim?
So it's a lot of people do a lot of different methods, but the method that I and most athletes now use is we have a bungee cord that wraps around my upper thigh and my guide's upper thigh, and we swim side by side. And when we come to turns and such, my guide will, give me a tap on the shoulder, like double tap my back or double tap my shoulder. Or we have certain cues that we have. Like if my guide needs me to speed up, he'll like tap the back of my head. If he needs me to slow down, he'll like tap the tap me back near the tap me back on like my lower back. Or so we have a series of tapping systems that let me know, that allow us to communicate.
Very good. All right. That's a very so Ironman Boulder was not a good race for me. I am a sea level dweller. I do not do well in the dry air. I got completely dehydrated in the bike. Right at like about mile 105, I realized I was like, I am overheated. And so it was a very long day for me. But we were there at the same time. So that's a very, very interesting part of this story. All right. So do you think that you would have pursued these ambitious endurance challenges if you had gotten the job you wanted right out of college? Do you think that you would have found your way to these things? Or do you think that if you had gotten the job, you would have just gone corporate and had a totally different life?
It's something I've thought about quite a bit, and I don't think I pursue Ironman or marathons or anything like that. At least, I don't think that I do. If I had gotten, a corporate job or, any job pretty quickly out of college, at the time, I thought the definition of success was climb the corporate ladder and have a really well-paying, well-respected job. And now I think a little differently, but no, I don't think I pursue any of this, at least at that time. Who
Yeah.
knows? Who knows? Maybe 10 years into a court, you know, 10, you know, 10, 12 years into you know, corporate career, maybe I start looking around. I'm like, I need to change things up a bit. Like, who
That
knows?
is the standard start time for the is the 37, 40-year-old. Oh, look, what should I do? I'm going to buy a new bike and
Exactly.
sign up for Ironman. All right.
Exactly.
So if you could give your younger self, if you could go back now and give your younger self, the recent college grad, a little bit of advice based on what you know now. Like, so if you, based on the last, what are we talking, 12 years of experience since this all like unfolded, what advice would you give your younger self?
I would give myself the advice that actually my triathlon coach and my endurance coach that I've had the last, you know, 6 or 7 years, you know, has given me, and that is to keep it stupid simple, do simple well, and do simple better. And whatever that means to my younger self, do it. So, you know, figure out how to simplify things, not overcomplicate them. Then do those simple things to a high standard. So, you know, in whatever pursuit that I was looking to do, you know, don't half-ass my way through job applications. Don't half-ass it. Do it. Have a high standard. And do it really, really well. And then when you think you've done it really, really well, just continually get better at it. Because there is, at the end of the day, there is no best, there's only better.
All right. Very nice. Very nice. Relentless forward progress. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So, in a minute, we're going to do the final questions, but I want to give you a chance to tell the audience what it is that you do these days, other than the endurance sports, if you want to share, and how they can connect with you and follow you online.
Yeah, so you know, these days, like you said earlier, I built, you know, my personal brand around just being an endurance adventure athlete. So you know, I'm still, you know, still racing a little bit here and there. You know, by the time this recording comes out, I will have done my third Boston Marathon. You know, this racing the
Coming
Boston
right up.
Marathon. Yep, racing the Boston Marathon in the elite field. So really excited about that. But then you know, but I also do a little bit of podcasting as well. Some of my paratriathlon teammates and I from the last couple of Paralympic Games have launched a brand new podcast called The Resident Table. So by the time this episode comes out, it will be live, and you know, we'll have at least four or five six episodes up. So super excited about that. So you can search The Resident Table on YouTube or all your favorite podcast platform of choice. And then I do I do a lot of public speaking, whether that be inspirational or motivational speaking, or speaking on applying high performance sport principles to our everyday lives. And you know, you can learn more about that by just, you know, reaching out to me. Kyle@kylekuhn.com is the best way to get a hold of me. And if you want to just keep up with all of my various adventures, the best way is to probably just follow me on Instagram, and my Instagram is at Iron Kyle, and that's EYERONKYLE.
Okay, very good. So I will put all the links to those in the show notes, and that'll be wherever you're listening to it. And also the easiest way for people to get those links, because people listen to podcasts while they're on the go, while they're on the
Yep.
treadmill, while they're doing a run. So be a part of the Imperfect Adulting email community, and I send it direct to your email box, and you can just click on the links, and it's easy peasy lemon squeezy. All right, Kyle, are you ready for the final three random questions?
Let's do it.
All right, so I have never been to Mount Kilimanjaro, but I know several people who have made that trip. I hear that one of the things that's interesting about that trip is that the food can be very interesting. What is the craziest thing that you had to eat or drink on that trip?
On that particular trip, I don't know if there was anything crazy that I had to eat or drink, but it was the first time that really experienced eating like this obsession with like hot dogs for we had like these hot dog like sausages basically almost at every single meal, and so we started calling them tube steak just to call it just to have it be something different. But the most interesting or strange thing that I've ever eaten at well at the time was I did have guinea pig in Peru when I did
The
this
cooey.
yeah
Yeah.
so but that was when I was in Peru back in 2006 or whenever that was. So that was before Kilimanjaro, but yeah.
Yeah, I have not eaten that. When we went
It's
to,
different.
people say it's different. When we went to, we saw that in Peru and in Ecuador, and at the time we had household pets that were guinea pigs. And so it was off the option for my family. It was like, we do not eat our pets.
For
Ours,
sure.
our guinea pigs have names, you know. So, all right. So technology sometimes gets a really bad rap. But what is a tool or a bit of technology that you would say improves your life and that you are actually very happy was invented?
The iPhone, I think, is the absolute most wonderful, brilliant invention of all time. It is basically an extension of my right hand. So, all Apple products now come with built-in screen reading softwares called it's called VoiceOver, and so you can actually access it on any iPhone, iPad, iPad Touch, or any Mac, any Mac product, any Apple product basically has VoiceOver built into it, and just with the wide variety of applications out there and stuff, it has made my life so much easier in terms of being able to actually text with friends and family, to being able to scan a a print document with my phone's camera, and then having that translate into audible text. I'm even at the we're even at the point now where with I can use my camera and be taking a video and ask ChatGPT at the same time what's going on around me in those types of environments. And it's I think technology is just amazing. And
That is amazing, actually.
I'm
That
only
is
scratching I'm only
really
scratching the
amazing.
surface. So
I'm very impressed. So differently, like Google Translate, when I'm in a place and I don't speak the language, I find to be a tremendous,
Oh yeah.
tremendous enhancement. But to put the visual spin on that, where it's telling you what it's seeing, that's mind-blowing. That's very, very cool. All right. So if you were a guest in my house and I offered you a choice of three snacks, the choices are a homemade chocolate brownie, a platter of fresh fruit, or number three, some salty, crunchy chips. Which do you choose?
All three.
All right, answered like an Iron Man or a marathoner in training. All the food, all the time. Perfect answer. Perfect answer. That's it, Kyle Kuhn. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, The journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.